Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. My goal is to help you wake up every day and think about your day. Think about your day, not your diet. Wouldn't that be amazing? Not just to lose the weight, but to lose the obsession and the preoccupation with food. Before we get started on the show, I want to tell you I have a great new giveaway going on. I have a bunch of extra copies of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, and I am giving them away for free. So grab yours while they're still around. As I said, it's only limited, but I'm really excited for as many people as possible to get their hands on the information in this book. I'm so proud of this book. It's going to give you so many things to not just think about and aha moments, but action plans, what to do. So you can go to drnina.info, drnina.info, and grab your free book. So if you would like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I can't wait to talk to you and hear about what is eating at you, what is weighing on you, because that is the real problem, not what you're eating. What you're eating is a solution to the problem. It is a problem, but it is not the main problem. It's a weed. We want to get to the root. Okay, so one of the roots that I commonly see, and I started talking about this a couple of weeks ago before I had my guest on last week, started to talk about why it's so important to learn how to say no. You know, because if you say yes to others when you really want to say no, guess what happens? You feel bad. You feel resentful. You feel anxious. You feel something, and it's not positive. It is not good. So what happens when you feel bad? Well, you're vulnerable to using food to cope. That is why it is so important to learn how to say no to others, to set boundaries without feeling bad and feeling bad about yourself. Often people identify more with the person that they're saying no to. Oh, I'm gonna hurt that person's feelings if I say no. I can't have that, while ignoring their own feelings. So here's the thing. You got to say yes to yourself. Obviously, there are some times where you say yes to other people and no to yourself. But if it is always that you give up you to take care of another person, that's a problem. And it's a problem because it's not fair to you. You have the right to whatever it is that you want or don't want. You have rights too. They don't have all the rights. And it's going to make you feel bad. And if you feel bad, a lot of the time, again, food's going to make you feel better, especially if you don't have, if you have not cultivated a way to respond to yourself instead of reacting. Reacting is, I feel bad. Sometimes you don't even know you feel bad, but you're triggered. Sometimes you know you are. Sometimes you don't know you are. And then go to the kitchen or the drive-thru or wherever. So the idea is to be able to not just identify what you're feeling, but respond to it. Respond to yourself in a new way. Because just going, I'm getting food, that's reacting. Responding is, okay, what's going on? This is what's going on. This is what I'm feeling. This is why. Here's what I need. Give myself some reassurance, right? Comfort words, not comfort food. Okay, so back to saying no. How do you say no more easily when you are used to saying yes? Step one, you got to acknowledge the other person's request. So you say, you know, I know you really need me to or want me to, whatever it is. And then step two, you set the limit. But that doesn't work for me. That's it. It sounds so simple. It's hard at first, as with anything new, but it gets easier with practice. So here's an example. Imagine a friend of yours is in some dire straits for whatever reason, dire financial straits, and asked to borrow money. Friend's getting a divorce, lost their job, whatever it is. They have a legitimate reason to borrow money from you, but you feel uncomfortable with that, understandably. So here's how it sounds. You say, I understand you're in a tough place right now. That's the acknowledgement. But I make it a rule not to lend money to friends, right? That way it's not personal. It's about your rule. These are your boundaries, and you're going to be, it's going to feel less rejecting to them. And it's going to feel less like you're rejecting them. Another example, imagine you hate horror movies, but your friend or spouse or partner wants to see the latest scary movie. They've gone to all the rom-coms with you or whatever it is, you know, the European art house films, and now they want some equality. Come see the horror movie with me. So before you commit to a night of hiding behind your hands, say something like, I know you'd really love to see that movie. I know how much you love horror movies. But those movies give me nightmares, and I really don't enjoy them. So how about we see something we both like, right? Not so terrible. So step one, acknowledge the person's request. Step two, set the limit in different ways. Step three, take your own side. Don't apologize. Don't make excuses. Don't justify or explain. Do set limits. Apologizing and making excuses is different from giving an explanation. Horror movies give me nightmares. I have a rule that I don't lend money to friends. It's a simple explanation. And step four, give yourself the right to have rights. Actually, as I'm talking, this should really be step one, right? Give yourself the right to have rights. You have the right to set boundaries. You have the right to your needs, your wants, your time, your interests, to make them as important as those of others. Other people do not have rights that supersede yours. When you are comfortable with those rights, when you give yourself the right to have rights, you won't comfort or distract yourself from uncomfortable moments with food, because you'll be having, A, fewer of those uncomfortable moments, and B, when you do have those uncomfortable moments, you'll know how to respond to yourself. So that's all good. If you have any questions, if you have any comments about how this topic pertains to you or any topic, if you would like to share anything at all, give me a call, 818-602-4929. Okay. Here's another topic that is very important, how to silence your inner critic. So let me ask you, do you ever say anything like this to yourself? You're not good enough. You don't deserve to be happy. You're such a loser. Does that sound familiar? If so, ouch, that is painful. That's mean. Can you imagine saying that to anybody else? I bet you can't. But if this is the way that you talk to yourself, you might use food as a way of escaping your own critical voice, right? Because that voice is critical. That's mean. And if that's the voice in your head that's talking to you all the time, and food gives you that escape, that food zone, that eating zone, that numb zone, you're going to take it, right? So eating can momentarily, unfortunately, no, it momentarily take you away from that internal critic. And that critic is the part that attacks your spirit. It stops you from living your best life. It makes you feel bad about yourself. Now, here's a quick way of identifying your inner critic. Because a lot of people will say they're so used to talking to themselves that way, they don't even see it as mean. I mean, they really don't. Until I start to point out, as I am doing now, hey, that's mean. Would you say that to anyone else? Would you say, you're not good enough? You don't deserve to be happy. You're such a loser. You're overweight. No one will love you. Things like that. Would you say that to anyone else? And people will say, no, never. That's mean. Except they have no problem saying it to themselves. So a quick way of identifying your inner critic is to catch when you talk to yourself in second person. As an example, you're a loser rather than I'm a loser. You're a loser, talking to yourself in second person from a position of you rather than first person. I'm a loser, which, by the way, is a lot harder to say. That's one way of identifying your inner critic. Because how you speak to yourself says a lot about your relationship to different parts of yourself. Now, everyone's dynamics are a little bit different, but there are usually three basic parts. I know I've talked about this a lot recently, but you know, repetition is the hallmark of change. In my sessions with patients, I often hear like, "I've talked about this so much. Why do you know? I keep repeating myself. I'm talking about the same thing over and over." And I say, "Yes, that's how this works. You're not just talking about it. We're challenging what it means that, you know, what you're saying. We're challenging what it means. It's like a template. Every time, it's like a wooden template. And you have just, every time you use words, you're just, it's like a little bit of sandpaper. And you can't really discern that you're doing anything to the template. But if you sandpaper it enough times with repetition, eventually that template is going to be gone. So, you know, repetition is good. So everyone is a little different, but there are three basic parts to us. We have the self, we have the critic, and we have the soother supporter. So the self, that is the part of you that has needs, wants, wishes, emotions, conflicts. When you say, "Well, I was feeling mad, glad, sad, afraid, anxious, worried, you know, whatever," that's your self talking. It's the part that has feelings and needs and wants and wishes and all of that. The critic informs you of all your perceived transgressions. It is relentlessly critical. It is able to find fault no matter what. Something good happens. "Oh, it's not good enough. You didn't do it fast enough. You should have done that 3 years ago," etc. And also, again, as I said, when you refer to yourself in the second person, it is usually the critic talking. Not everyone's critic comes at them from a second person place. You know, often people will say, "I feel so, I know that I'm awful. I know I'm a piece of whatever, trash." That's also critical. But most often, the second person you voice, that's your mean inner critic. So one thing to consider is if that inner critic reminds you of anyone you know. Does that critic remind you of someone who actually spoke to you that way or spoke to someone else that way? Because sometimes we internalize what we're exposed to. So if you have someone in your life, it could be a parent, it could be a sibling, it could be a family member, it could be a best friend, it could be someone in your life who is mean to you. You get used to it. It's like the you know, put a frog in a pot of cool water and turn up the heat. The frog doesn't know it's boiling. Put that same frog in boiling water, it's going to jump right out. We can get so used to being criticized by ourselves and others, we don't even register it as hot. We don't even register it as critical. So ask yourself, does that voice sound familiar? The soother supporter is the part that can be calm, understanding, and supportive, that can soothe, that can support. Often that's the part of you that can show up for other people, but not for you. So take a moment and think about how you express support for others. How do you talk to other people? Say a friend of yours, say your child, say your spouse, say someone you care about is going through a hard time. How do you support them? Do you say, here's this pizza, eat the whole thing and everything's going to be okay. Eat those cookies and everything's going to be okay. Just come with me to the drive-thru. That's going to solve your problems. I doubt it. And if that is what you do, then keep listening. But often the soother supporter just is easily available for other people, but not for yourself. So imagine if you spoke to yourself the way you speak to other people. If you could be as soothing and supportive and kind and understanding to yourself as you are to others. Because ideally, when you have a need, a wish, an emotion, a conflict, when something feels bad, when you're upset about something, when you're worried, when you're anxious, when you're feeling terrible, you got to respond to yourself with comfort. Now, food is a form of comfort. We understand why. Right? Our very first experience of sort of connection and bonding and relationship and love and feeling safe is being fed. food is comfort, except it's really kind of an illusion of comfort because it doesn't change how we feel. It just gives us an escape. Comforting, soothing words helps us feel better, reminds us of who we are, what we've been through, how we can get through tough times again, how this feeling doesn't define us. We can encourage ourselves, we can acknowledge ourselves with comforting words. They make a difference, and ultimately they become sweeter than any kind of food. So often with people who struggle with food, when the self has a feeling, ooh, I'm feeling this, the critic attacks, right? So in the absence of kind of a nurturing, comforting response to something painful or upsetting, you're gonna turn to food for comfort because you feel something bad and then your inner critic pipes up and yells at you. Now you feel doubly bad and then there's food for escape. And that in turn, of course, leads the critic to judge you even more. How could you have eaten that? Oh my God, you have no willpower. You failed again. You're never gonna lose weight. And the cycle continues. So when you respond to yourself in a soothing way, instead of criticizing or attacking yourself, you're going to be less likely to turn to food to deal with difficult or upsetting emotions. Okay, I had some thoughts, but then I thought better of them. Okay, in all candor, I have to tell you guys, some of you are familiar with my amazing dog, Zane, my 170-pound nearly blind, totally deaf rescue dog who's like the love of my life. Don't tell my husband. No, he knows. I think he's the love of his life, too. Anyway, just the biggest bundle of love ever. He got sick last night. He had some kind of upset tummy, and I was up with him until 3 in the morning, according to my Fitbit. Yep, didn't go to sleep till after 3, got up at 5:30. So I am a little bit like slow on the uptake occasionally. I'm sure those of you who have been sleep deprived in the past can totally relate, but bear with me. And by the way, he seems to be fine today. It's just one of those things. Okay, so what do you do to challenge this critic? You got to take action. So imagine that mental courtroom. And I know you are extremely well acquainted with that inner prosecutor, with that critic. And now it is time to cultivate an internal defense attorney. So when the prosecutor says, you're not good enough, you're not enough, you're not this, you're too much that, object. Object. Then take the floor and demand evidence for these accusations. Evidence means solid evidence, not interpretation. Example, a patient of mine once thought that everyone hated her and thought she was ugly. She was convinced that everyone hated her, pretended to like her, but that they secretly didn't like her and that they thought she was ugly. And she had no actual evidence for this, but she just felt, right? She felt as if people disliked her and found her repulsive, her word, repulsive. So any judge will tell you that feelings are not facts. Feelings are not admissible as evidence. So if you feel like there's something wrong with you, challenge that notion. Feelings are not thoughts either. Feelings are emotions, anger, sadness, happiness, anxiety, etc. Thoughts are interpretations or beliefs. So if you feel like you should be in a different place in your life, for example, that is not a feeling. That is a thought. What you really may be thinking is something along the lines of, I have some view of where I should be in my life and my reality is not matching up with my ideal. But where does that ideal come from? Where does it come from? People tell me all the time, I should be married by now, or I should have a higher position in my corporate job. I should be somewhere where I'm not. Where do these ideas come from? So when the internal prosecutor accuses you of not being good enough, do not accept it as truth. Do not accept it as truth. Define that the prosecutor define good enough. And by the way, that is subjective. That is not a number on the scale. And that is not a timeline on your in your age. By the way, there's some great book. I've got to find out the title of it, but it's a book of it's all about late bloomers, and it's all about people who didn't become successful until after they were 40. Oh, here is a call. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina, my favorite person in the whole world.
Nick. Oh, wait,
how
Nick. Nick, yay. Nick, I got to tell you, I have been hearing from people saying, what happened to your caller, Nick? Ronan, my engineer, last week, he's like, do you think Nick's okay? Like, he hasn't called in for a while. It is so good to hear from you.
Oh, it's going so nice to call. But I got to tell you, I've been kicking myself so long about being heavy. I don't remember not. I never even looked in the mirror and said, I'm thin. So I'm dealing with this that you're saying. I can't wait to read your book, to read about the dieting, what we've discussed before.
Why not to
but
diet?
This is terrible. I've been kicking myself. I mean, since I was a kid, even walking home from high school, stopping in the deli and getting french fries or a corned beef sandwich or whatever. And I was always a chubby kid, and people knew me as a chubby kid. And even when I remember we discussed, I went back to my reunion, and, yeah. and everybody couldn't believe how thin I was, how much weight I lost. And I still felt healthy.
Yes.
So we're dealing with a sickness here.
No. Oh, that's a critical way to think. That is being critical. We're dealing with an idea that you have taken as reality based in your childhood from what I know of what you've shared on the show. You felt that being the chubby kid or the overweight kid what made you unlikable and not good enough. Something along those lines.
And
and so for you, the idea was if you lost weight, you would be good enough. That the bad parts of you, the unlikable parts of you, were somehow in the pounds. And then what happens is, of course, you lose weight and you're still you. You still feel like you. And that's why no matter how much weight you lose, you still don't feel good enough, which makes it like, oh, I'll lose another few pounds and another few pounds and another few pounds. And then it's never enough. And then if you gain weight, it becomes, oh no, I'm gaining. The bad part of me is coming back.
Terrible. I've been going to the doctor and to deal with the problem I have. And they always want to weigh me. And I always deny it. I give them a number. So this last time I had to get on the scale and I almost had a heart attack. How high it was. And so all of this is bothering me so much that how do I get myself in control? That two things here, get myself so I can respect myself and who I am and not worry that I might be a few pounds over or just, you know, avoid food. Just, you know, sometimes I just don't want to eat. But I eat anyways.
Okay, so
it's terrible.
Okay, adopt a curious attitude. Okay, got to adopt a curious attitude because if you're not respecting yourself, why? I have a question for you. I assume you have buddies. You've got friends out there, right?
Right.
Are you going to respect them more if they lose weight?
No, I respect them by having relationships and fun and things like that. That's how I respect them and have a good time with them. I don't judge them on what their waistline is.
Then why do you judge yourself? See, isn't it interesting that you have one way of relating to other people? And another way of relating to yourself?
Well, because I've been hitting myself about being heavy for so, like I said, when I got on, so long, it's just...
So, Nick, when you're talking about your friends, you're talking from a position of being a grown man who's reasonable. Yes, I like my friends because of who they are and their good qualities and all of that. However, you are looking at yourself through the eyes of the boy that you were, who never felt good enough.
Right.
And by the way, there's a reason you were probably eating, right? Let's not forget that, too. Why would you be stopping and getting all of that food on the way home from school? There's a reason. Something was going on in your life that caused you to turn to food. So don't lose sight of that.
Right. Yeah, that might be it. What's at home when I get there?
And so whatever was at home was so scary
right.
to you that you used food to kind of, I don't know, gird yourself or fill something, or like, there was a reason for it.
Right.
So have compassion for why. You weren't just...
You know, and I never did well at school. Like, my neighbors were just all great students, you know. The four kids that I played with, they were all... they all went to medical school, you know, and obviously I didn't. And so I'm just saying that the, you know, with the pressure of that, it was, God, there's so many pressures. I could write them down and they made me sick.
So
they'd be up all night taking care of me like the dog.
Right. And that's painful. And you soothed yourself by eating. So you got this
yes.
message that because you weren't the good student that your neighbors were, that somehow you mm-hmm. weren't good enough, which is a very painful thing for a kid to think. And you soothed yourself with food, but then you felt like there was something wrong with you, which was the not smart enough or whatever it is that you told yourself.
Well, I've got work to do, you know. I've got work to do to get my body in shape. But not just, you know, dieting, I mean, just taking care of myself. And my eating, I mean, really, like concentrating on it. But I mean,
if you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else. So, hey, you know, I was just talking about challenging the inner critic and looking for evidence. Maybe would you be game to go through that with your situation, right? That the feeling. That,
yes.
Okay. So what is the idea? The idea, if you distill it down to its very essence, what would you say the core belief you have about yourself is? What does I feel fat really mean about you?
What it means about me?
Yeah.
That I'm not successful. Why would people want to be friends with me? I'm not successful. I'm just
you're not
good.
You're not good.
Yeah, I'm not a good person. I don't have it. What talents do I have? What kind of talents do I really have? And then I get aggravated. I tell you, then things pop up and really take over my mind. And one of them is I woke up again today, and we've discussed this before, and I'm just throwing it for a side thing for you to put it in a pocket, is that I can't live the way my partner lives in the apartment. It's such a mess. It's just such a mess. It's a mess. We have a woman that comes in every maybe twice a week to come in and help me out, you know, do some exercising, this, that, and so on. And then, you know, even she mentioned to me, because she's my buddy, she thinks that it's such a mess in the apartment.
Nick?
You know?
Can I make
yeah,
a can I
please.
Ask you something? Okay, so first of all, First of all, I just want to say, as to the what good are you, what talents do you have, and all of that, being talented does not make, being having some special talent does not make someone good enough. So you want to challenge the idea that you should somehow be this, achieving something or have some capabilities to be good enough, and that success renders you good enough. What makes someone a good person is not their level of success, and it is not their talent. There are a lot of successful, talented people who are not nice people. What makes someone good and good enough is how is their integrity, how they are in the world, how they treat other people. So that's one thing to think about. But here's what I really want to get to. Could it be that you're using the I'm not good enough and feeling bad about yourself and bad about weight as a way to avoid what is really weighing on you, which is your partner's messiness? I think we've used the word hoarding in the past, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps it is easier to focus on your weight and to feel bad about yourself than to feel upset, angry, disappointed, frustrated, or whatever with your partner's messiness. Or I think that seems to be a light term for what is going on.
Oh, God, there's so, so much to it. You know, I mean, I'm starting off to do some exercising today and this and that, starting to do that, but there's only so much I can do right now. But I'm just hoping that it's late enough that, you know, that I can see something grow with it over the next weeks or so on and so forth.
Can I point something out?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think I'm about to tell you? Any guesses?
No, go ahead.
Okay. What I'm going to say is that I, as soon as I suggested that perhaps this focus on weight and all of that is distracting you from what's weighing on you, namely the condition of your living situation, you immediately went to exercise. You went back to your body. Like, so to be disappointed and upset at your partner is so perhaps upsetting to you that you keep going back to something physical, which is what you did as a kid. Who was waiting at home? Your mother was waiting at home, right?
No.
So you learned early on, avoid the negative feelings you have about the woman in the house. Turn against yourself.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, you ought to write a book. Oh, you did.
Oh, I did. Yes, I did write a book. Thank you for that great plug. I'm holding it up for those of you who are looking at Instagram Live. Yes, yes, my new book. Available at drnina.info. Free with shipping for just a short amount of time. But, and that was also a nice distraction away from you towards me. I fell for it, Nick.
Thank you.
You have a talent in diverting avoidance. Away of protection. It is avoidance, but it is avoidance in service of protection. Right. So the.
Oh, God.
So then when you can say what's really going on, then
so
you can deal
you
with that.
Suggest? What do you suggest? What do I do? Do I just stop eating? Do I stop exercising? Do I tell her she's got to move out of the apartment? What do I do?
Well, you can't stop eating. You do have to live on this planet. You have to focus on not on what's what you're eating, but what is eating at you, which is this hoarding problem.
I got that.
So, and asking her to move out of the apartment seems to me to be the last thing that you do. There are a lot of other steps that you can do in the meantime. This is actually a psychological issue. It's not just being messy. It serves a purpose just as focusing on food serves a purpose. There's something about having things in the house, filling up the house so it's not empty, that serves a purpose for people. Just as for other people, filling up with food serves a purpose. So she needs some professional help, I think. This is not something you can get over on your own.
And she eats all the time. I saw that in there too. She's always eating.
Okay, but that doesn't bother you as much as the hoarding. So
right.
So what to do is the root of all of this is this hoarding situation. I mean, there are a few roots, but the biggest root is this. And that needs to be dealt with directly. And whether it's a support group or a therapist or someone has either a support group and or either a therapist and a support group. Someone professional has to help her deal with why
maybe
she's
that's
doing
where
it.
That's where I should approach it with her. Right? That she needs help.
Yeah, she like, or even say like, you know, we need to get to the bottom of this. I think you need to understand why you are needing to create this mess. There's some fear involved. You're not going to get over it by yourself. It's not about cleaning up. You know, it's something deeper. You could say that you are dealing with your own roots. You get it. You're going to help her deal with her roots, and let's work on this together. Let's find you some help.
All right.
Yeah.
See, I'm at a wedding this weekend. See you. Talk to you next week.
Nick.
So wonderful to hear your voice.
It is wonderful to hear your voice, and I'm glad that you're okay and that, you know, that you're back to checking in. You're okay.
Yeah.
You are okay. And you remember, what is it?
Don't forget that today is 9/11.
You're right. Yes. I should have actually started the show making reference to that. Today is 9/11.
Anytime I can help you, it would be my pleasure.
Thank you, Nick. Keep me posted and let me know how it's going. And remember,
you know I will.
Focus on what's eating at you, not what you're eating. Talk to you next week?
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye. Oh, that is good to hear from Nick. That has been a while. And yes, today is 9/11. I will never forget where I was 18 years ago. And my heart and thoughts are with everyone who lost someone that day and with the country, what we endured and how we survived. And I also remember how we all had those American flags on our windows. Our car windows, American flags were everywhere, such a spirit of unity and a sense of togetherness. And it is my hope that we can rediscover that kind of unity and togetherness that we had then without a tragedy bringing it on, especially because of the disunity that we are currently in. Okay, enough politics. Moving on. So basically, as I showed with Nick, something else is going on to cause these thoughts. And then you present the alternative evidence to the court. Oh, maybe it's not that you're not good enough. Maybe success and talent is not the way you define good enoughness. Let's challenge that. And alternative evidence is, well, this person is, I have a partner and she loves me and therefore I must be lovable, must be good enough. That's evidence. So think about how you actually live your life. And if you're listening to this, there is a part of you that is proactive, that is hopeful, that is willing to consider new perspectives, new possibilities. If you've tried and failed lots of diets, for example, you are not a failure. You're just really tenacious, right? It's all about how you frame everything. You could say, I've been on 100 diets and I've lost and gained the same 100 pounds. I'm such a failure. I'm such a loser and not in a good way. Or you could say, wow, I am really persistent. I have tried and failed 100 times. Like Michael Jordan has said, he has failed and failed over and over in his life, and that is why he succeeds. Right? Each failure brings us to success. So maybe after 100 diets, you say, okay, I've been tenacious. Dieting is not working. Maybe there's something else I need to try. And here you are. You're listening to me and figuring out, well, maybe there's a reason why you're eating instead of focusing on what you're eating. Okay. So, again, ask yourself, what do you think is wrong with you? It's a hard question to ask yourself, but Nick sure answered it with alacrity, right? Not successful, not good, not talented. Where's the evidence? And by the way, you know, why is that evidence for being good enough? My patient who thought people hated her and thought she was ugly had no evidence for this, but she had lots of evidence to contradict these thoughts. People always called her. They wanted to hang out with her. They even complimented her on her appearance. So why didn't she let that evidence in? Because she told herself, oh, they're just being nice. They don't really mean it. They really think I'm ugly, so they're telling me I'm attractive just so that I won't feel bad. They feel sorry for me. So, you know, you probably don't work for the psychic network is what I told her. You don't actually know what people are thinking, but sometimes you got to take them at face value. If multiple people tell you, hey, you know, I like you, let's hang out, let's do things together, they probably don't hate you. So when you weigh the evidence and judge for yourself, chances are you'll come to a different conclusion than if you only look at yourself from the eyes of that prosecutor. So bottom line, stop punishing yourself for crimes you have not committed. Liberate yourself from that inner prosecutor and feel better about yourself so you don't use food for comfort. When you can validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself instead of reacting by using food to escape, you're not going to use food to escape. Simple as that. Not so simple, but eventually that's how it works. When we don't tell our kids, oh, you're sad, someone was mean to you at school, here's some ice cream. Well, some of us do, but they shouldn't. So what, tell me about that. What hurt your feelings? What does it mean about you? You listen, you talk. Okay. Hi there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. Nicole.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Thank you. Good morning. Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. A little sleep deprived, but fine.
I'm sorry about that. I have a question for you today. It's about snacking late at night. I feel like for some reason, like the whole day, I'm like busy. I'm go, go, go. I'm working. And then nighttime comes around and like whether I'm home or whether I go out to dinner and then I come home, I find myself wanting to, like, snack before bed. And I don't know. I've been trying to tap into the feelings. I don't know if it is loneliness or I do want comfort. But, like, it's just, I don't know. And then I find that the nights I don't do that, I feel so much better the next day. So I would prefer not to eat right before bed, but I just don't know how to stop it.
Okay. So this is a good question. And I have some thoughts and some questions. So first question is,
Okay. You
said that you're usually not hungry. You're snacking not because you're hungry, but just because you're kind of, something's going on that you're not quite sure what. Or is it physical hunger or emotional hunger?
You mean at night or during the day?
At night.
Oh, at night? I guess it's more emotional. I guess it's more like, I guess it starts off with hunger, so I'm hungry, and then I eat, and then, like, it continues.
Okay. So there could be a few things going on. One is if you eat something and then you tell yourself, what do you tell yourself after you eat something at night? Do you have a, have you just broken a rule?
Do I have a rule?
Yeah, like, I shouldn't eat at night? You have a rule that says
no.
I shouldn't?
Okay. I have it.
That's good.
I don't have a rule.
Okay. That's good. So then that leads me to the last thing, which is what does focusing on food or eating distract you from? Because when you're busy during the day, when you're working, when you're out and about, when you're seeing friends, when you're doing things, when you're occupied, you're occupied. Right? You're thinking about all kinds of things. You're interacting with people. When you're alone at night, by yourself, that's when you could start having thoughts, feelings that you become aware of that are uncomfortable, that are scary, that are upsetting.
Yeah. That definitely resonates.
Okay, so what do you think that you are distracting yourself from?
Dr. Nina?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry, I lost you for a second.
No, you're... Oh, I'm back. So what are you distracting?
That's right. I'm distracting myself from thinking about, like, you know, why, yeah, I don't want to say on live radio, but there definitely are other thoughts that I'm trying to, like, I guess, escape from, and it's, like, an easy way out to just, like, distract myself with food.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because then, I mean, it doesn't matter what those things are, you're aware of them, if you don't deal with them, if you don't name them and recognize them and challenge them, and if, by the way, if they're fears, the way to deal with them is fear is what if is fear. The answer is what is, which is reality. So when you start going to a fear place to remind yourself of what is, what you know to be true can help.
Right.
Rather than, I don't want to go there. I don't want to think about it. Oh my God, I can't believe I ate that.
Right. Well, now it's making me think, so I still live with my family at home, and I've been thinking about moving out, and now it's making me think, like, what if I move out, and then I feel, I said what if, so that is fear based, but what if I'm going to say it anyways, because I have to finish the thought, but what if I move out, and then I feel lonely, and then my family's not there to comfort me, like, am I going to turn to food? I hope that doesn't happen.
Is your family there to comfort you? And it doesn't matter if your family is or is not there to comfort you. We can't rely on the outside.
Yeah.
We need to be able to comfort ourselves.
Yeah, you're right. I have to be self-sufficient.
We have to be able to give ourselves what we need, as well as get them from others. We can't. It's not good when we're only relying on it from other people, and it's not good when we only give it to ourselves. We need both.
Yeah, for sure. That's really helpful. Do we have time for one more question, Dr. Nina?
Maybe a super quick question, because I only have a couple more minutes, but yeah, tell me.
Are you sure? I want you to have enough time to wrap up.
Oh, it's fine. Just
okay. Okay.
Yeah, what's
okay. So I feel like I've already kind of, I've asked it before and I know the answer. So like I'm a little bit under the weather. I don't know if you could hear it in my voice. I'm not feeling great. And I feel like when I'm sick, I know that the answer to tiredness is sleep and not food. But like when it comes to being sick, I know the answer to being sick is not food. That doesn't fix being sick. But for some reason, when I'm sick, I just feel like I need more energy, and so I end up like, I don't know, I feel like eating more, or like I'm tired, but I'm still going to work, so, and then I'm like, should I skip work and just sleep so I don't eat for energy? I don't know, that doesn't seem healthy either.
Well, first of all, I think it's great that you're asking yourself all these questions and that you're aware of and reflecting. That's really great for you, for that you're doing that,
okay.
Because there was a time when we were talking and you wouldn't have done that. Just quick answer is to say, why is it that you are have an adversarial stance with being sick? Like, what does sick mean to you? I know my husband, when we first met, he hated being sick because to him it meant he was weak. So there are all kinds of reasons that people have for kind of like fighting being sick or not wanting to take care of themselves because there's some meaning about being sick. So I guess
that's so spot on. I guess being sick to me feels like I have no strength. I can't do my Zumba classes that I love. I'm like, I'm just not myself. I'm out of commission. I'm out of everything. My whole life is turned upside down.
Okay, so there you go. So that's why, I mean, I'd love to talk with you more about this.
Yeah.
Next week, if you can call in, because I think this is something that a lot of people can identify with. So give it some thought, and we will talk about it next week and maybe delve in a little deeper.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Nina.
Thank you, Nicole. Great to talk with you.
Okay.
Feel better. Feel better.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I am here with the Dr. Nina Show every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific live. You can listen later anywhere you get podcasts. And again, if you want to grab a copy of my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, there are limited copies available for free. I would love for you to have one. So just head over to drnina.info, drnina.info, and get one for yourself. And I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.